Just before I hand over to Steve, he's tall as well, so it'll be in the right position for him. I just want to read just a little passage of scripture from Isaiah chapter 6. Some of you can probably quote this, I expect, can't you, Mike? Starts off, in the year that King Uzziah died. And just think about that for a few moments. In the year that King Uzziah died, can you imagine what the country must have been in? Been in shock, traumatized, just wondering what's going to happen. And then he goes on to say, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. The dead king, an empty throne. But there is a full throne. There is a throne which is occupied in heaven. Isn't that thrilling? And so you see here straight away that there is an almighty God who is in charge of all things at all times, no matter what the situation is. But I want you to notice something else. If you flip down to verse 8, and then I heard a voice, the voice of the Lord saying to me, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And I said, here am I, send me. Isn't that incredible? The Almighty God, the one who's in control of every situation, seeks to work through individuals like you and me. That is incredible. That God should take somebody like you and me and work through them. That God should take somebody like Steve Loader and give him a passion for coming alongside people and talking with people. And Steve's going to share with us this evening. Steve's got a family of three. Now, I've forgotten the name of your wife. It began with an A, didn't it?
Dawn.
So it did begin with an A, didn't it? Oh, yes. Okay. Has a lovely wife by the name of Dawn and three children. And when you see Steve as he stands up before you, it'll make you wonder how come that he's got children, two children, 20 years of age, and one of 17. So, Steve, come and share your passion with us, please, of the work on the docks. And this is one of the Steve's one of the people that we do support here at Welton. Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Lovely to be here. And if you don't know it, you are supporting me. So try and remember my face. I don't think I've been on an evening like this before. It's normally on a morning, so it's nice and cosy together, especially with it being so wet and horrible outside. I've got pictures that hopefully we can kind of look through, and it give you a bit of a better idea of what I'm actually doing. And, you know, just to share something of the passion I have for sharing my faith, really. The passage that David just shared with us is something I actually spoke on here before in the past, because it's you know, so it means that means a lot to me. Where you know, Isaiah was enthusiastic in saying, "Here I am, send me, use me," instead of sort of trying to hide and sort of, you know, go and pick on somebody else. And I just felt it was evidence of the man's heart. And so, in a way, I've tried to, in my walk with the Lord, to cultivate a willingness and a boldness to talk to other people. It could be on the building sites that I work at Monday to Thursday, or it could be on the ships on a Friday. But, you know, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, I want to be open about my faith. So, I wonder if we can sort of get these pictures up, and is there a chance of maybe dropping these this row of lights off over here?
Over there behind you, Steve.
So I just pick a...
is a lottery.
Oh, look at that. Yes.
Right, what I'll do is I'll quickly sort of see if I can go through some of the pictures and maybe concentrate a little bit more on what we see, and then I'll sort of kind of talk a bit more in depth of what I'm doing. This is the Seafarer Centre, which is in Portbury Docks, opened in 2001 by Princess Anne, and a particularly nice centre. I've been in a number of different Seafarer Centres, Cardiff, Newport, Barry and that, and they're all pretty grim. This is a nice centre that God has blessed the people in Portbury and Avonmouth, because the Avonmouth seafarers come over and use this centre. For example, the next picture. This is inside. They would have phones, computers, a little area where they can buy chocolate and perfume and sort of odds and ends, get a cup of coffee and maybe hamburger or something. It's important that the seafarers can get off of the ships. It really is like a prison being on these ships. And when they come into port, they can't always get off the ship, actually. But in Portbury, the ship sort of very close to the centre, and they can just stroll across, come in, and just get away from that ship that they spend so many months on, and just maybe chill out, or like I say, go on to the internet, and with modern technology they can actually see with the webcams, they can see their loved ones back at home, which is fantastic when you see a wife holding up a fairly young child in her arms, and you can see the joy on these guys' faces as they see their families again and talk with them. So next picture. This is a typical ship coming in to Portbury. I often enjoy watching the tugs pull these ships in. There's quite a skill in stopping these huge ships from stoving into the sides. They normally have one at the front, one at the back, and when it comes in through the lock, they'll have one in the middle just shoving it around. Literally. Next picture. What I've done, I've taken a number of pictures so you can see some of the things that go on in Portbury and Avonmouth docks, some of the things that the products they deal with. This here actually is metal, scrap metal, which is goes through these huge machines and sort of chops it all up into little bits and then go on to the ship. Because it's in so small bits, they can kind of get more on the ship. So Avonmouth deals quite a bit in scrap metal, and if you know anything about what's going on in the world, scrap metal has a very high value at the moment. So that's one of the things that goes on in Avonmouth. Next picture. That there is glass, recycling glass. You can't quite see it, but I mean that is bottles all smashed to pieces, and there's one bottle that's coming down there, and I've just caught it. It's not smashed at all, but in Avonmouth they also deal with recycling glass. Next picture. This is coal. I wish you could see the picture better, but particularly in Portbury, and particularly this time of year, we have a lot of coal coming in from places like Russia. And there's a guy, you can just see him up at the top there, sat in this little cabin. It's a huge machine which lowers itself down into the hull of the ship. And that big wheel turns around and it removes tons and tons of coal in an hour. Nothing like it used to be years ago, where it's just a kind of grab and then it drop out. You know, these machines are fantastic. And it's all about getting the ship in and then out as quick as possible from the port. So everything is geared up for quickness, really. Next picture. Cars. I'm sure when you go over Avonmouth Bridge, you see the huge car parks. There's about a maximum of 700,000 cars that go through Portbury in a year. And I love cars. I actually got a very crummy car myself, but or van, I should say. These cars are, a lot of cars coming in from around the world, and we also send out Land Rovers, Jags, and things like that. And whenever I spot a really nice car, I pull up next to it and get out and sit in the thing. No, nobody's told me off yet, but it's my chance just to sort of enjoy these things. But the car ships is big business in Portbury, and it's typical of a car ship to be in and out within certainly within a day. The only thing with the car ships, they call them ro-ros, and because they're in for such a brief period of time, it's very difficult to have some kind of meaningful input with the seafarers. So I do feel very much for the seafarers on these car carriers, because they are very busy and have little time to rest. Next picture. That's a container ship in Portbury. And we see these ships, don't we, sort of on programmes and TV and that. And they carry all sorts of stuff. I've seen Mercedes cars in these containers. And they're regular ships that come into Portbury. And we've had a number of good contacts with these ships. We had one young 23-year-old seafarer just died suddenly not so long back, and we were able to spend some quality time with these guys. We asked the captain whether we could help in any way, and he said, we'll just go into the mess room and we'll see if anybody's around. And we had 10 seafarers come in, and John, who I work with, and myself just ministered to these guys, just really, off the top of our heads, really, and under God's guidance to what we should say and do with them. And it just worked really well. It's a great time of blessing, and we prayed for them. And I find it very fulfilling to know that, because I made myself available, they had some help. We gave them some Bibles and stuff as well. And we were able to follow up that help because, like I say, there are regular ships that come in. Next one. This ship is also in Portbury, brings in aviation fuel, which is pipes then to various places around the country. And I have to, just behind that red looking crane thing, is a gantry which I have to go up over, and I don't like heights. And this is one of the challenges of me going on the ships, is going up these. That one's actually quite sturdy, but many of them I ain't so sure about. To go on a ship, and I find when I'm on the ship, I'm actually, you go in the mess room on a ship carrying aviation fuel, and there's these guys within the mess room smoking away. And it always makes you feel a little bit twitchy, But, we don't get on these ships quite so much because it takes so long to get onto the ship. The security is that much greater. That comes into Portbury aviation fuel. Next one. This again, is a car carrier. You can see the decks, how they sandwich these cars in, and they have lifts. You go in and get a lift up to the top decks, and they have not just cars, many of them have all sorts of machinery on there. I've been on there, and they've had trains stacked up in there, high speed trains, so they have all sorts of things, and they're absolutely huge. And this deck, this ramp, it weighs tons, actually tons and tons, and it's amazing to see the thing pull up, the size of the whole ship is incredible. In fact, it's on one of these ships that last year they were doing a lifeboat drill, and the lifeboat snapped off the kind of anchors at the top. I think you've seen that on the news, and it plunged 100 foot into the sea and killed one of the guys. And I was able to go and see one of the other guys that survived. He was put up in a hotel and had a fantastic time with him, just really trying to encourage him, really, from the experience that you've been through. Next picture. There's me posing in my van. I mean, that's my van. This day that I give once a week is unpaid, it's voluntary work, and it's my van. Everything I, you know, I do is of myself, but it's fantastic. It's a joy to do it, and the stickers on the side are actually Mission to Seafarers, which is Anglican. I'm not Anglican, so I kind of went under the shadow of their wings for a while, but they're not really interested in me. But they were interested in taking this picture, actually, because they could pretend that I worked for them. I've now got Port of Bristol Seafarer Centre stickers on my van. But it enables me to drive within anywhere around the port, and I've got to be very careful, because if one of those containers that I showed you earlier was to drop, it would flat pack me right there and then. So you've got to be very careful, and there's no barriers to stop you driving it straight into the dock either. So keep your eyes open. Next picture. This is the kind of thing, where I pull up alongside a ship. I've gone onto the computer before I've left the Seafarer Centre. I found out what ships are in, and then I go onto another web page, which I go for various different things until I discover what nationalities are actually on the ship, because you can have about 8 nationalities on one ship. If they got Filipinos on there, I'm more than happy, because I love them as a people, and they're very appreciative, and people that I find it very easy to work with. So I kind of open up my van, select a load of Bibles, Christian literature. I also take on things like National Geographic and other fictional books. You know, I want to provide, you know, things that they would just be encouraged with. And then I go onto the ship. Here's the next picture. I think I showed you this picture before. But this, I've not altered this. I've not kind of angled it in a way to make it look steeper. This is what I faced on a particular ship I went on. When it's unloaded, these big bulkers, they rise right up out the water. And I'm looking at that and thinking, oh, maybe I'll go on to the next ship. I'll miss it. Because I am terrified. I am terrified because... you can see through the steps as you're going up, and all I can see is a big drop, and it looks a very painful drop, and I'm, you know, petrified. But I say to myself, Lord, I'm doing this for you. If I die, it's your fault. And I try and carry stuff up as well, you know, books as well, which is a real challenge, because I want to hold on for dear life, and yet I have to let go with one hand. Next picture. There I am coming down, slightly relieved, but still very worried about going downwards. John, who I work with, he's an older guy and in his 60s, but he's not worried about heights. So I let him go in front of me, and so that if I fall, I land on him. And just really so I got somebody to focus on. Up and down these ships is, and it's quite physically quite tiring as well. Next picture. This is kind of around the Christmas period. This is what I'm going to be doing next month, is taking on gifts. There are many people who give to the work of Mission to Seafarers. And I just feel like it's Father Christmas. I love it. Because these guys, they're not at home. They want to be at home, but they're not. They're at sea. Normally on about a 9-month contract. I hate being away for a couple of days. 9 months away from their families. And it's awful over the Christmas period. to be away from your families. And so we get all these gifts and we go on the ships. And I had one officer in floods of tears. You know, he was so overwhelmed with that. It was on a Christmas Eve that we were bringing on these gifts and we were laughing with them and just, you know, just trying to lift up their spirits. And he just became very emotional and cried and cried. And we just put arms around him and just, you know, prayed into his life, really. But it's, you know, I mean, it's that guy in the middle with a lovely smile on their faces, you know, just really thankful. That they've got something they can open. Say, this is Christmas. You know, God has not forgotten you. Next picture. Some Polish guys. They're also appreciative. It's not all those presents for those two. We're very careful that, you know, these things are spread out over the entire crew. So normally they get are handed to the captain, who hands them out, but again, very appreciative of these gifts. Next picture. So all nationalities, doesn't matter who you are, so it's not for Christians, it's for everyone. You could be an out-and-out atheist, you'll get a gift, unconditional. And that really speaks volumes to these people, because, you know, I know in this country, people tend to not Christians, you know, for who we are and that, but who else is doing these things, you know? And these guys know it, you know, Muslims, Hindus, like say atheists and that. It's the Christians who are coming onto these ships and giving these gifts. And we're you know, there's no conditions to it. They don't have to listen to an hour's sermon or anything like that. You know, they just get the gifts and we, you know, wish them a Merry Christmas. So he's appreciative as well. Next one. We also take on clothes, you know, decent stuff as well. Not so many nationalities like to receive clothes nowadays, but there still are groups out there who appreciate being given stuff like that. And particularly at winter time with the woolly hats and all those sorts of things are, you know, gratefully received. Next one. That's what it's all about for me. yes, I mean, I like talking to people anyway, and I like to encourage. These are, it's you know, that's me. That's the way I am. But if I can talk about Jesus, then, you know, I'm thrilled. And I look for opportunities on the ships. I ask the Lord for divine appointments, is the way I put it. And just say, Lord, lead us to somebody who we need to be talking with. And we just kind of, you just talk and you just look for an opening. Is there something there that, you know, is there a way in that you could begin to share something of the love of the Lord? And I often say things like, you know, God has not forgotten you. You know, he knows who you are and he knows where you are, you know, and on the oceans of this world, in what country you're in. He knows where you are and he knows about your family as well. God has not forgotten you. And I believe that he's brought me on this ship today to remind you of that fact. Many a time I've seen tears in these guys' eyes because I think many of these seafarers do feel forgotten, do feel overlooked. And it's one of the things I love about the Lord, that he doesn't overlook anyone. You know, and it's important for these guys to know that there is a God who looks down from heaven and considers all that they do, you know, looks into their lives and knows all about them. And we encourage them to know this God through Jesus Christ, to know of that grace and that mercy, and to have a 24/7 hotline to God. You know, so when they go in their cabin, you know, maybe on a night time and they're exhausted, they can talk to the Almighty God and just commune with him. I feel that's fantastic. And it's something that inspires me to encourage these guys as well. So, we will take on Christian literature as well as Bibles. Unfortunately, a lot of these things, money kind of limits how much we can buy in. But whenever we get funding, we try to get good quality Christian materials. I like taking on the newspapers. You get things like The Sun, I think Good News, and various other magazines. I like things that are kind of visually attractive. Some of the older tracts that we used to give out years ago are very dull looking and not really appealing. Nowadays, things got a lot more colour in and visually, draws these seafarers to pick them up. And obviously, Alpha literature is good quality as well. Next one. Bibles as well. Trinity House in London provides a lot of stuff, a lot of Bibles and that. But we don't give them out, sort of willy-nilly. They're obviously expensive, and we look for real interest and people that would appreciate these Bibles. And also, we got to be discerning that they're not being taken to be sold, on the black market in another country, really. It's to benefit the people on the ships. But it's nice to see a Bible being snapped up, say, oh, can I have one? Please let me have one. And so these guys are appreciating having these Bibles on the ship. Next one. That's John, who I work with. He's, bringing on a box full of Christian material, Bibles, etc., to somebody who's gratefully receiving them. Next one. Here's me actually talking to one of the dockers on the ships, seizing an opportunity just to share with them. Somebody in my church said, why do I wear a hard hat and a high-vis jacket? You have to. You're not allowed to move around the port without it. And to be honest, with all the machinery and everything, you want to be noticed because you wouldn't be around for much longer. So that's why we're always wearing that kind of gear. Next picture. Here I am in my element, sat down, cup of coffee or cup of tea, and just sharing. But this guy had a story to tell, big family, and knew something of God, but needed kind of encouragement, needed that extra insight. I remember going on a ship, we were in a mess room. There were some guys in there, and we thought, great, we've got people we can talk to. And we weren't with them very long, and the captain came in. He said, come into my, I think it's canteen, whatever he called it, into where the officers' mess room was. And we thought, oh, what a shame, to be, being led away from these guys. But we sat down, and he said, I'll be back in a minute. He came back with a Bible, and he opened it up, and he had loads of questions about Scripture. And we were able to just share with him. And, these guys, because they don't have church like we do. We can go and see our minister or somebody within the church. They don't have that, you see. So if there are any questions or God is already speaking to them, it's important that somebody comes on and is able to help them with these questions. And this guy had lots of questions as well. But there are Christians on these ships, and they need fellowship. They need encouragement, as well as people who need to hear for the first time. Next one. Posing picture again. It's just a joy to be able to share something with these guys. And we do like to have a laugh as well. Do like to have a laugh with these guys. And it kind of breaks down barriers across all nationalities. And they realise that we're there just to be a friend and to help in some way. Next one. Brought this picture today. This guy who I was chatting to some while ago, we were having a great time, and I found out his name is Steve as well. He's from India. His name's Steve, and same age as me, and he also is a lay preacher. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm talking to the Indian version of me. And, you know, we were just got on like a house on fire. And to see, you know, he just kind of was radiating, really. So, you know, I came off really blessed and encouraged. And more importantly, he was blessed and encouraged as well. Next one. Love the Filipinos. The guy I mentioned earlier, 23-year-old, who died on the ship suddenly. It was on this ship. And this guy here, you know, is a bit of a comedian, really. And we just encouraged him, say, look, you know, you're bringing laughter into this ship, really. You know, he wasn't sort of making light of what had happened, but he was really just sort of a source of encouragement to quite a depressive atmosphere on that ship at that time. So we had a real good time with him and kind of built him up and encouraged him as well. Next one. Little Indian guy. I loved it. This guy was a Christian. Yeah, and I realised when I was in his cabin that, you know, we had a good time sharing about the Lord, but he had pornographic pictures on his wall. And I thought, you know, this is the problem. You know, when you're isolated, you kind of lose track of what is right and wrong, really. You know, he has a love for the Lord, but he couldn't quite sort of see everything that was going on around him. And so, again, it's important to encourage, you know, something of God into their lives that would kind of help them on the right track. And I think I would be the same, you know, left to my own devices with no help or encouragement for anybody else. I'd probably go quickly downhill. So we need each other. You know, we're stronger together. And this guy, like all the other seafarers, he needs that help as well. Next one. This is a guy from Burma, a Christian from Burma, and he was the real deal, lovely guy. And he was just finishing his time on the ship and going back to Burma in a time which was particularly difficult. As a nation, they're very, certainly a little while back, were very anti-Christian. And it's wonderful that God was able to bring these people to us. We can build them up, pray for them, give them, you know, Bibles and other material, Bible study material, things like that, and then send them back. You know, I think God is very gracious to sort of, you know, to put people right on our doorstep, you know, from across the world. I don't have to go to Africa in places like that. You can bring them all over here, and I'll witness that to them here and equip them here. So a lovely guy. Next one. In the mess room, this would be a typical picture of, you know, sitting amongst these guys, eating, which is great, and just striking up conversations, you know, and hopefully talking about the Lord. Next one. So I'm not the only one who has a bad hair day. So, you know, these guys, they just sort of flake out in the mess room. They're absolutely beat, whacked out. And, you know, it's, again, just trying to lift their spirits up and encourage them. Next one. The guy right in the middle with the white T-shirt, he was a Christian. So, you know, it's important that we encouraged him as well as the rest. Great to get together and, like I say, to have a laugh and leave... on the table there will be various different tracks and different things that when we're gone, that's when the real ministry starts, because they'll pick these things up and read them when they've got time. Next. This guy's a Hindu. Had quite a dramatic story where he had quite a serious accident, nearly chopped his head off, and he had major operations, and he's back on track, but he said it made him question who God is. I mean, he's, as a Hindu, he obviously has some faith in, believes in lots of gods and that, and we were able to tell them about Jesus Christ. I try to avoid saying to people, you're wrong and I'm right, but rather we just give that personal testimony of the significance of Christ. And which meant by taking that approach, we've been able to openly talk to Muslims and say Hindus and people from all faiths, really, you know, because we say, well, this is what Christ means to me. And as yet, nobody's swung a punch at me or anything, so we're all right. Next one. That's John Larkin around. That's we have a mix of humour throughout the day, and he's playing hide-and-seek on one of the ships. He's actually retiring next year, and I've been... I expect at some point you might, you know, be praying for me. That I need prayer. I love this guy. He thinks like me, and we just work very well together on the ships. And he's going to be going, and I'm already gearing up to do this work on my own. But as a source of encouragement, of kind of mentoring in that, you know, I'm going to miss him. And that is a massive challenge for me, big challenge. And so you could pray for me, particularly next year, that God would sustain me. Because, you know, I've been a Christian many years, and we have a lot of funny bunnies, as John would say, in the church. And when you find somebody who thinks like you, see, you know, a real kind of, it's like a spiritual twin, you get a lot from those particular people. And I got a lot from John. So he's going next year. Next one. And there you are. This is, you know, again, the appreciation shown by seafarers for the work that we do. Whether they're Christian, non-Christian, they're all appreciative that we're there for them. And, you know, to encourage and to befriend them and to say they're not alone. They are not alone. And, you know, I count it as a privilege to be able to go on those ships and meet with them. Have I got any other pictures of that? Is that it? Oh, yeah, the logo. Stick the logo up. Earlier on this year, and it really ties in very well, like I say, John's going next year, and John is mission to seafarers. So, as I said, I was able to come under his wing. But he's gone. Where does that leave me? I'm a ship visitor and I'm trained. I've been on all the courses, but I can't be a part of the committees. There's a committee in the centre and there's a Merchant Navy Warfare Board committee, you see. Certainly in the Seafarer Centre, if you're not affiliated to anyone, you can't go on the committee. So you haven't got a voice. And... I could still go on the ships, but I kind of lose a bit of the kind of leverage that I might have around the port. And I can't go to the mission to seafarers because they're Anglican. AOS, where the priest turns up every now and then, they're the Catholic version of the mission work. So they obviously don't want me. And John said, what about the Sailor Society? They represent the free church, really. And the Sailor Society actually are the custodians of the Seafarer Centre, though I have never met anyone from the Sailor Society. They are custodians. So anyway, I wrote a letter to them and said, is there any chance that I could be affiliated to you? I do all this, and this on at the port, and gave them a bit of a background of myself. And that, and they wrote back to me and were thrilled at the work that I was doing and made me honorary chaplain to the Sailor Society. So I was really pleased and to get certificates. I never get certificates for anything. So, and so God is kind of set in place, you know. It means that, you know, I don't like committees, but I'm able to go on these committees. The port knows who I am. And it means, you know, there aren't any obstacles for me carrying on with the work on the ships, talking to the seafarers. So that's why I got this up there. Like, I do exactly the same work. Nothing changes. But from the port's point of view, it's kind of more official, because at the last Merchant Navy Welfare Board, the Catholic priest said he was the only chaplain now at the port, sort of thing. He's quite smug about it. We are actually, on Tuesday, we're meeting again. We meet quarterly. So I'll be able to tell him, no, he's not the only chaplain on the port. I am as well. So there, sort of thing. So politics, isn't it? You know what it's like in these things. But let me close with, I've just got a few questions, like a little quiz. It's going to be quick, but it might sort of... be of interest to you, and you all look really intellectual, so I think you'll probably actually might get some of these straight away. Which port has the world's largest lock? You can guess. I mean, I wouldn't have known this, so don't worry. Which port has the world's largest lock? No. Nope. Nope. No. No, you're warm. I tell you, it's called the Barendrecht Lock, and I probably got that pronounced wrong because I'm from Bedminster, but can't say anything foreign, which is in the port of Antwerp in Belgium. That's got the world's largest lock. Which UK lock is the largest? No, I'll put you out your misery. It's the Royal Portbury Dock. It has the largest entrance lock into any UK port, accommodating vessels up to 135 feet wide and 951 feet long. So it's quite a big lock, and that's at Portbury. The biggest car carrier in the world, car carrier. How many cars do you think that carrier can hold? How many?
1,000.
That's pretty close. Pretty close. Is, but no, not that. Actually, it's not that close. You need to up it a bit.
2,000.
No, it's actually 8,000. I've been in Portbury Docks. I've been on a car carrier that holds 6,500 cars, and they are big. What part of the world has the highest tidal range? You know, so high tide, low tide, and the.
Portbury.
No.
Well, Western Supermare has got the highest tide in the world.
The. Well, no, because I've researched this. You are quite. Able to go and research it again. In the Bay of Fundy in North America, which is very near Canada, very close to Canada, it has a 47 to 53 feet tidal range. The second highest is the Severn Estuary, which is at Avonmouth, which is between 47 and 49 feet. So it's huge. What nationality has the largest seafaring labour force? Exact, yes, the Filipinos. Thank the Lord for that. I won't say which nationalities. I wouldn't want it in that place. You know, so
Steve, yeah. Do they speak English?
Yeah, that's a good question. They do speak English. The English language is the kind of the nautical language, if you like, the maritime language across the world. They have to have some kind of common language because there are so many nationalities on a particular ship. Praise God, it's English. That doesn't mean it's necessarily easy for me because they're very can be very heavily accented. And, it's sometimes a job to hear what they're saying. But it is English, so and some are brilliant at it, they're very clear. What is the biggest ship that is able to come into Portbury in a tonnage? What's the tonnage?
I'm keeping quiet.
I'll tell you, actually. It's 130,000, and they call it DWT, which is dead weight ton, means without any cargo, fuel, or people on board. 130,000 dead weight ton. So it's pretty big.
Does dead weight mean empty?
Well, I've read it said with no cargo or crew on it. So, yeah. It's empty ship, yeah. I learned that today. So this actually has helped me. What is particularly good about the position of Portbury and Avonmouth Docks? What would you think was, you know, made it a good location? Very good. Go to the top of the class. It's because it says here you're able to access a population of 45 million people within a 300-kilometre radius. Bristol has the best motorway access. Both Avonmouth and Portbury have their own dedicated motorway junctions on the M5, just 7 miles from the M4 interchange and 4 miles from the second Severn crossing. And they both Portbury and Avonmouth have a railway link as well. So it's actually in a fantastic spot, you know, for, you know, by road and rail to get right out into the country. And finally, where on the ship, on a ship, is the poop deck. Poop deck. I had to learn this when I did training. Where would you think the poop deck is? It is. Yeah, it's at the back of the ship. It's on the back. It's a deck. It's normally above a cabin, but at the aft of the ship. So there you are. I hope that was a bit of fun for you. I think time is gone. Can I just finish with a verse? I'm not going to do any preaching now. Time is gone. But from 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 9, where Paul, the Apostle Paul says, we make it our goal to please him. And I found that very challenging recently. I might actually preach on it next time I'm here. But, you know, if our goal is to please him, then one of the things that pleases him is a willingness to serve him. You know, maybe tonight, if that has anything to do with ships and that, but is that willingness to say, Lord, here I am, send me, use me, and you'd be surprised at what God is prepared to do with ordinary people. You don't come much more ordinary than me, but God is, he loves, you know, people who would say, here I am, you know, I'm available to you. I think I'll leave it on that.